Good afternoon and welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly radio connection to bicycles and cycling, as well as fitness and other related topics. The Outspoken Cyclist is a radio show produced by cyclists for cyclists. And now here's your host, the Outspoken Cyclist herself, Diane Lees.
Hello and welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Lees, along with Greg Priddy.
Hi, Diane. How are you?
Very well, sir. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Yeah. Did you have a good New Year?
I try to ignore that particular holiday. I think it's kind of arbitrary.
Because it comes the first day of the year?
You could pick any point in the 12-month cycle and call it the New Year, you know. I understand there are astronomical things that line up and all that. But in general, I think it's kind of arbitrary.
Yeah. So you don't do anything special?
No.
Did you go for a bike ride?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's special. In January, that's always special. Around here.
I go on a bike ride every chance I get. So
that's true.
So doing it on the 31st of December or the 1st of January, it's just a bike ride.
Okay. Okay.
Just a bike ride.
So in 2010 and 2011, you turned the tables on me and I was the guest for the New Year's show.
That's right. That's right.
Yep. Tonight. We're not doing that. We're going to change it up, and we're going to offer a retrospective of 2012. From the passing of the transportation bill, such as it was, to the fall from grace of ex-7-time winner of the Tour de France, Lance Armstrong, because, of course, no cycling retrospective of 2012 could leave him out, no matter how much you might want to. And assisting me in discussing the most noteworthy stories of 2012 are Leslie Cohn, the doyen of cyclismus.com, and the UCI overlord, better known as not Pat McQuaid. The UCI overlord does not divulge his real name or his location, but he is, as Leslie puts it, quote, our resident pundit and prognosticator, and in fact was named by Velo magazine as an influential mover and shaker. We may not be the capital steps, but we hope you enjoy our particular brand of fun as we unveil our top picks from 2012. Grab a beverage, get on your trainer, do whatever it is you do when you listen, and let's welcome Leslie Cohn and the UCI Overlord to the Outspoken Cyclist. Good evening, you two. Thanks for joining us on our first show of 2013. Leslie Cohn from cyclismus.com, the UCI Overlord, or better known as not Pat McQuaid, also with cyclismus.com. Leslie, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Diane. Happy New Year to you. It's great to be here.
Well, we're going to have some fun tonight. So
I hope so.
Take a moment to reintroduce yourself to our listeners with a little bit of your background and the work that you do at cyclismus.com.
Okay. So I'm the editor-in-chief of Cyclismus. We have our website that I think you're familiar with. And it's my job to herd all of the cats. I keep all of our writers and contributors and pro bloggers and diarists sounding good in print on the website and helping the guys with the TV show keep that on track and not getting too out of hand.
How many people actually are working with cyclismus.com right now?
Oh, good Lord. We've got... I must have at least 40 users that are signed into the website as contributors. Regular contributors and behind-the-scenes people, you know, it's like a half a dozen people that help put together the TV show, run the site, run the servers, and are regular contributors. And then we've got another 25 to 40 who have contributed on a semi-regular basis, whether it's a product review or a pro cyclist doing a diary or a video blog or something.
Okay. How many people visit cyclismus.com every month? Do you know? Of course you.
Of course.
The overlord is giggling.
He's our stats weenie, so he'll be able to tell you that.
Oh, okay. Then I'll ask him. So fine. UCI Overlord, welcome to the show.
Oh, Diane, thank you. I've been a long time listener of the program and really enjoy your work. So thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. So tell us about your role with cyclismus.com, a little bit about you without, of course, divulging too much information.
Well, you know, I'm probably the chief pot stirrer for Cyclismus on Twitter. As the UCI underscore overlord. And my I guess you could say what I do is I help coordinate many things behind the scenes. I also have behind the scenes conversations with team owners, with editors in chiefs, media people in the sport of cycling, and also many key individuals that are involved in the political arena. I'm also one who ends up receiving a fair amount of information that people would like to have sent out, but unfortunately, because of their position, cannot afford to do so. And I spend a lot of time working with journalists to ensure that information that needs to reach the public reaches said public. And in some respects, it's been unfortunate because I've been in a position where I've had to be the bearer of bad news on a number of fronts the last 2 years. And then also I'm a regular contributor as a columnist for Cyclismus.com. And as Leslie alluded to, I also handle a lot of things behind the scenes. So I help out on the tech side of things, which, as you asked, we see anywhere between 80,000 people, upwards of 200,000 people per month, depending on the month and time of year. So it's quite busy at Cyclismus Towers.
Wow.
And then beyond that, I also appear. This summer, I contributed to Velo. Cyclingnews.com likes to mention me from time to time. This year, I was runner up to Jonathan Vauders as one of the most popular non-cycling Twitter contributors to the sport. So I'm one of those shadowy guys that likes to also have fun and poke a few comments here and there when necessary.
Cool. So we are all here to unveil our 12 top stories of 2012. You know, we're going to be satirical and mirthful. And we're going to start with not Lance, because everybody knows he'll be one of the stories of the year. So instead, I'd like to start with two other central characters of the doping scandal, the real Pat McQuaid, as opposed to the not Pat McQuaid, and Hein Verbruggen. Patrick Brady called them, quote, the most clueless persons in cycling. What's the story about Pat McQuaid and Hein Verbruggen?
Well, you know, I know Patrick, I speak to Patrick quite frequently, and he called them the most clueless persons in cycling, but in some respects, I call them the most cagey. Both Hein Verbruggen and Pat McQuaid have been running the show since all of this basically began. I mean, the EPO hit the scene back in the late 80s, early 90s, and Hein Verbruggen ascended to the throne as UCI president then. And I think that in some respects, I'm not sure if they're clueless. I think it's more or less they're trying to maintain their hold on business as usual. You know, they've been conducting themselves in a particular fashion for a number of years, and it's worked for them. You know, they've anointed certain people as their, I guess you could say, spokesperson or spokespeople for the sport. You know, Lance Armstrong was the one that they touted like you wouldn't believe as saying, oh, he's the best thing since sliced bread. And Pat McQuaid and Hein Verbruggen both, you know, spoke directly to Lance Armstrong and had a relationship with Lance Armstrong. So in one respect, it's not that they're clueless. I think that they've had a method. That they've all been about promoting the sport in a certain way. The trouble is the way that they've gone about promoting the sport has been bad and mishandled. Because if you do what they've done in any other business, both would have been fired.
True.
Hands down. Absolutely hands down. And I've been saying this since I started as the Overlord character 2 years ago. And that's partly why I started. I couldn't believe some of the things that Pat McQuaid was saying. If a CEO of a corporation, if Steve Jobs from Apple, may he rest in peace and we miss you, Steve, if he had said some of the things that Pat McQuaid had been saying, he would have been laughed out of the tech sector and thrown out of his position, hands down.
So why haven't they been thrown out?
You know, I think part of it is Pat McQuaid and Hein Verbruggen both have solid political relationships with the IOC. And everything starts and stops with the IOC. The IOC gives cycling its blessing. It's an Olympic sport, and that's the most important thing as far as both of those two have been concerned. So they will do whatever it takes to protect cycling's position in the Olympics. So whatever the IOC says they should do, they should do. Juan Antonio Samaranch back in 1995 said to Hein Verbruggen, we want you to combine there was two associations at the time. There was an amateur association and a professional association, and they were separate, and they didn't do things together. Semrich said, we want the professionals to enter the Olympics, so we want you to unite the FICP and the FICA into one association, and that's when all the chaos started. So I think part of the issue is that their most important thing is having the cycling in the Olympics, because that's what they feel is the most important profile. And so they do whatever the IOC says.
Okay.
And this is part of the reason why we have this issue, because whoever they speak to at the IOC, they could change their mind within 4 years or 3 years or 2 years or 1 year. And we see Pat McQuaid and Hein Verbruggen changing their story constantly, because for them, they're chasing the money and they're chasing the IOC approval. That's the bottom line.
All right. Well, let's leave the story at that for a second, because it'll come back around when we get to, you know, the elephant in the room, as we call him at the end. So my guess is that Leslie's going to address this. The name Greg LeMond resurfaced this year in connection with Jamie Fuller, CEO of Skins and the Change Cycling Now organization. How did that story develop, and where do you think it's going to go in the future?
I'm not 100% sure how they got Greg first involved in all of this. And again, I'm going to defer to the overlord on the question, other than to say, I mean, he's the one who's really been talking to a lot of these
really
people.
Why am I talking to you at all today, Leslie? I mean,
because I'm going to talk to you about exciting things like coffee spilled in the lap. And
oh, okay. You got those. Got it. Okay. Very cool. Okay. All right, UCI overlord. Let's talk about Greg LeMond resurfacing and then standing up and going, yeah, I'll take the presidency, maybe.
Well, you know, it was funny because I spent some time chatting with Jamie Fuller when he first had the idea of putting this Change Cycling Now organization together. And, you know, Greg LeMond, Jamie Fuller has a real affinity for Greg LeMond. And all of us do, because Greg is one of those ones that we highlight as one of the clean champions. And Greg, I mean, Greg wasn't even big on sugar. I mean, seriously. I mean, this guy, I mean, he walks the walk to the point where, in 1986, just to make sure that no one could even tamper with his samples, he actually put his thumbprint and photographed it on his urine samples, because there's always a history in the 50s and 60s of you know, urine samples being tainted. And it's true. Herbie Sykes, you know, documented in his book Magilia Rosa some of the stories back from Italy in the 60s. So there's always been that sort of specter. So Greg really, I mean, if anyone is clean, it's Greg. And Jamie, of course, wanted him. So he reached out to Greg and actually had David Walsh and Paul Kimmage reach out to him as well. And Greg had some real interest in being a part, because he wants to make a difference. And I can say to you that during the summit, it was joked about that Greg should be UCI president.
Okay.
And it came out as a bit of a joke. And then it actually turned serious and said, well, why not? Why couldn't Greg be, you know, why couldn't he be UCI president? There's no reason why he shouldn't be, and maybe he's a good candidate. And I think Greg, what his attitude was, is he just wanted to, he wanted to say, look, we need a change. We need someone new at the top, and that's a start. And he's willing to play that role. Is he the best for the role? Probably not. And he even admitted that himself. And where's it going to go in the future? That's a good question. I mean, Jamie, I spoke to him via email yesterday, and he's working on a couple of things. He's working on the UCI commission with WADA and USADA. And I think, you know, Jamie's big thing is he wants to see some changes. He wants to see separation of anti-doping initiatives from the UCI. We all do. I think there needs to be a separation of church and state, so to speak, in cycling. And I think that that's necessary for moving forward. And we'll see where it's going to go. It's going to be very interesting over the next 3 to 4 months.
All right, let me take a moment. We're speaking with the UCI overlord, or not Pat McQuaid. Can't tell you where he is, can't tell you his real name, but he's got all of the dope on people. And we're talking with, I couldn't help it, it just fell out, Leslie Cohen. Both of them are with Cyclismus.com. Leslie's in New York. So, okay, this is the hot coffee spilled on a woman's lap saga. Let's talk about the Flint family of San Francisco and their beef with Strava. Do they or should they even have a case? And go ahead and tell our listeners what the case is.
What happened is 2 years ago, a guy named William Flint lost his life when he was trying to achieve a Strava record in California, and he had to brake suddenly to avoid a car, lost control of the bike, lost his life. And it was according to the family that he was chasing a new fast time on this segment on Strava. And then the family decided that they were going to sue Strava for negligence because they felt that the popular app that a lot of us use to record our rides was encouraging reckless behavior and disregard for laws in the quest for, you know, king and queen of the mountains and, you know, fastest segment times and that sort of thing. Even though you sign a disclaimer waiver when you agree to use the app.
Right.
So the family was taking issue with the fact that there was a lack of accountability.
Well, what about the accountability of the people signing up? I mean, this is the same thing as if you don't want to see porn on your computer, you know, change the screen. I kind of feel that way. You have to be somewhat responsible for yourself. So is this suit going forward or has it been thrown out?
Well, actually, interestingly enough, Strava is countersuing the family, claiming to have no responsibility. They say that his original electronic signature, given when he joined the Strava website, excludes Strava from responsibility of legal claims or demands,
okay,
according to an article from Bicycle Retailer and Industry News, right? So the countersuit asserts that his death was due to his own negligence and basically is saying, come on, people, take responsibility for yourself. He was riding on the wrong side of the road. He was riding over the posted speed limit, allegedly. So who's wrong and who's right?
Yeah, he was 10 miles over the posted speed limit from what I read.
He was doing 35 and 25 from his GPS data, according to what I've read.
As they say, the jury's out on that one.
Yeah. From a personal standpoint, I think people need to take responsibility for their actions. And it kind of reminds me of a situation when I was a skier. And I was skiing on a mountain, and I was hit from behind by a snowboarder. I fractured 4 vertebrae in my back. And I had the option of pursuing something because I was clearly not in the wrong and I was injured and I had medical bills from another person who was skiing recklessly, he was snowboarding recklessly on the mountain. And you know what? I said, no. When I got on the ski lift and I went up to the top of the mountain, I took responsibility for myself and my actions and anything that anybody else might have done and left it at that. People should do the same when they're riding on the road. Just own it. Do it. Own it for yourself.
Well, especially with sports. You know, it's one thing to spill coffee in your lap. It's something else altogether to get on a bicycle at high speeds, you know, and be looking at your computer instead of looking at the road. Yeah, you're right. Take responsibility. Okay, let's move on. I think one of the sadder stories of the year is the dropout rate among sponsors for teams. This one might have some, you know, really deep and ongoing ramifications. How do you see this playing out in the upcoming 2013 racing season? And I don't know who voted on doing this one. And okay, Overlord, let's hear it.
You know, I think that part of the issue is many of the pro teams and many of the race organizers, they're not pitching themselves correctly. I think that is the biggest problem. Sometimes these guys set themselves up for failure with how they handle it. You know, when you go to a sponsor and say, I guarantee my team is 100% clean, and one, you know, bit guy from an outpost in France decides he's trying to save his contract, so he takes into temptation and dope once, and all of a sudden you lose a sponsor. All of these organizations need to take a step back and a realistic look at the situation that cycling's in and say to their sponsors, this is what's going on. I mean, what we do at Cyclismus, we've got business partners that we do business with, but we tell them how it is. And we tell them exactly what we do, how we do it, and they can take it or leave it. And if they don't, if it doesn't work for them, that's great. They go on and they move to a different organization that works better for them. And I think cycling has been wringing their hands so much saying, oh, we need to have money. We need to do this. We need to do it for the revenue. Sometimes if you do the right thing for the right reasons, the right sponsors will come along. And there's stories of many teams who have done that, and they've done it well. And I hate to say it, I'm going to highlight Lotto Bellasol, and I'm going to highlight Argo Shimano, because they're two teams that have done it right, and they've got a good sponsor base that understands their approach, understands where they are, and they're doing very well. And also, as far as the race organization standpoint, RCS has also done the same thing. They're on the upswing in Italy. I mean, they've got rising viewership. They've got more fans interested because they actually care about the fans. And I think that's another thing that seems to be forgotten as well. So what bothers me is, yeah, there's a dropout rate of sponsors, but these guys, I don't blame them. I don't blame Rabobank for dropping out because they were told a fish story, big time. So I would be, if I was Rabobank, I'd be dropping out as well. Oakley. I mean, Oakley was lied to for years. Can you blame them for dropping out? Nissan. Nissan was told one story about Johan Bruneel and how wonderful they are and how amazing they are. And look what the story is now. Can you blame Nissan for dropping out? No. So the responsibility goes back again to the damn team owners and the damn race organizers to do it the right way. And that's my firm belief.
Wow. So what we're going to do is take a quick break at the top of the hour here, and we will come back with more of our stories from 2012 with the UCI Overlord, not Pat McQuaid, and Leslie Cohn from cyclismus.com. We'll be right back on The Outspoken Cyclist.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
Oh, what are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
What are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. It's been a long time since we've had an adventure in the forest.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
You're right. I should get out.
Yeah, the forest is not that far away.
Hey, Mom!
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
While cutting molding with a 12-inch dual compound miter saw, while holding a newborn baby in your arms, when face-to-face with a congregation of alligators, with the ball in your hands and the entire freaking season on the line.
There are a million places you'd never consider texting, so why would you do it while driving? NASCAR driver Casey Kane here, asking you to please stop the text, and together we can stop the wrecks.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. Get the message at stoptextstopwrecks.org.
We are back. I am Diane Lees, and I'm your host on The Outspoken Cyclist this evening. And our review of stories from 2012 with the UCI Overlord, not Pat McQuaid, and Leslie Cohn from cyclismus.com. The next story is about the Schleck brothers. So they seem to have imploded this year, or last year by now. They were such rising stars. What's up with them?
Oh, gosh, those poor Schleck boys. So the latest is apparently that we now have to wait until January 30th to find out what Frank Schleck's fate is. That's when the final decision is going to get handed down on his Zipamide infraction in Luxembourg. The disciplinary hearing is coming. He is, from what I understand, suspended, not fired from Radio Shack Nissan, and he's not even been officially sanctioned by the UCI. The poor guy's in limbo land. He doesn't even know what's happening for himself, right? He failed the test during the tour for Zipamide when he gave a sample on the 14th, and he still doesn't know his fate.
What's Zipamide?
It's a diuretic. Okay. That he claims he was poisoned, or, you know, the translation, it's his sample was tainted, or he was given something that was tainted with the diuretic. It's often used as a masking agent, apparently.
Okay.
To mask other drug use. You know, you pee it out.
Right.
But, you know, he's asserting his innocence, obviously, and says he has no idea how it entered his system.
Uh-huh.
So he thinks it's sabotage.
Okay.
So find out what's going to happen on January 30th, what kind of sanction he's going to face. But to the best of my knowledge, he still is flying under the Radio Shack Nissan, well, let's say the Radio Shack banner, now that Nissan has dropped out.
And his brother?
His brother Andy. There was an announcement, I guess a week before Christmas, that you know, with Johan Bruneel waiting for his hearing with the USADA.
Right.
I don't know. Talking about that later. It looks like Kim Anderson, who had been their DS in the past, is going to come back and help shepherd Andy, you know, for his future racing. So maybe that will help Andy. I haven't kept up on the latest. I don't know what his first race is going to be coming back. I can't remember if he said he was going to do the Tour Down Under.
Is he physically riding and racing?
Damn, he's training hard, and he's going to get his season underway with the Tour Down Under in January. Kim Anderson is going to be there for, you know, much of his career, and will be beside him in July for the tour and most of the season. So they're on a mission to get Andy riding strongly again, and hopefully Brother Frank will join him and they can hold hands merrily down the mountain together.
Okay. That was good. I've got this picture in my mind. Very nice. I guess we need to talk a little bit about equipment. All this electronic stuff has been introduced. We did talk on the show a couple of weeks ago about some 12-speed radio-controlled system that will be compatible with other stuff. So, UCI Overlord, what do you think? Shimano's coming out with the 9000 series? Electronics all the way down?
I think Leslie did more research on this one, but I'll...
He's still using down tube shifters.
Oh, well then, well, okay. You know, they're not all that bad, but I think they are a little archaic by now.
I'm teasing. To be perfectly frank, I'm sort of old school myself, and I'm really interested to see what's going on with this. I read the Bike Radar review, and it sounds like this Shimano 9000 is going to be incredibly smooth, incredibly fabulous.
We like both the Durace and the Altegro. I mean, we've been installing it all year, and the stuff works like a charm. They didn't have the full 9000 at Interbike. They didn't have it all there for me to play with long enough. So I think there was one group set in the country. So what else? Any other equipment that tickles your fancy, either of you?
I have to say, you know, the electronic shifting is a pretty interesting development, and I really like the fact that there's been some talk about Shimano and Campagnolo behind the scenes collaborating slightly in order to freeze out a certain other company.
Really?
Isn't that interesting? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it was really, I've been hearing that from a bunch of the tech weenies saying that, yeah, that Campagnolo and Shimano have been doing that, and to the detriment of a certain four-letter company. So there's always these behind the stories that come out when it comes to tech stuff, but I'm the clothing horse of the group, and I've been really focusing on a lot of the product coming out from Rafa this year, from Volpine, and some of the other manufacturers that have been doing some, you know, pretty phenomenal crossover, and what I've seen this year especially is that crossover product. So, and what I mean by crossover is something that is functional on the bike and off the bike. And I think that's a pretty cool development for cycling. We've been sausages for so long. You know, we've been encased in Lycra. You know what I mean? Like you walk to the Starbucks and you walk like a duck and you look like you belong on, I don't know, on the ski slopes. And I think, like, for example, Volpine this year did a beautiful merino wool jersey that had a V-neck and stylish buttons down, but it was very practical to use when you're doing some riding. And I rode a few hundred kilometers in it this year and quite liked it. And Rafa's been doing the same. So, you know, I think it's really interesting to see that the performance racing wear, you know, coming over into casual wear, and I think we're going to see a lot more of that moving forward, especially now that Rafa is involved with Team Sky and unveiling their new team kit and some casual wear as well. So that I'm looking forward to seeing what Rafa and Team Sky do.
That's cool. I like hearing that. And,
yeah.
You know, that cycling will finally be stylish in a way that you can be proud of it instead of feeling like a peacock. So let's talk about what I thought was one of the best reads all year, the Secret Race. So what about Tyler Hamilton?
What about Tyler? I thought it was a phenomenal book. I couldn't put it down personally.
Yep.
It was, I think that it was a well-deserved award as, you know, the sports book of the year. I think that he and Dan Coyle did a tremendous job of telling that story. And, you know, whether a lot of people will be in Tyler's corner now or not, it remains to be seen. I think that there are a lot of people out there who, you know, they're just never going to be able to reconcile the fact that he lied. He lied to our faces for so long. And, you know, the fantastical stories of chimeric twins and, you know, whatnot, really didn't sit well with people that made proper choices early on and chose not to lie and chose not to dope. But I thought it was a heartbreaking story, and the relationship between himself and Lance Armstrong, and, you know, sort of an admiration and friendship that then went awry, and the retribution and the really nasty side of Lance Armstrong's personality coming out, the detail to which he chronicled that journey. For me, that was really, that was the book of 2012 to
so
read. And
is this movie material?
Correct me if I'm wrong. Overlord, has this not been optioned?
I heard that they're looking at making a movie, but there's been several rumblings in Hollywood about various books and various stories. I mean, they're looking at the Matt Damon, Lance Armstrong business is still floating around, and they're looking at changing it and making it more darker. So, yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting, but I think part of it is a lot of these cycling types trying to cash in, because cycling's pretty hot based upon Armstrong and based upon Wiggins. So we'll see what actually comes out of Hollywood, or what actually comes out at all.
Well, you mentioned Wiggins, and that's where we're going next. The Brits certainly did their fair share of winning this year. How did Bradley Wiggins get so high so fast, and no real pun intended, and certainly I'm not making any accusations, but how did he get where he got?
You know, Wiggins is an interesting one. I'm accused, and in fact, I'm being accused as we speak on Twitter. Seriously, literally just being accused of being a Wiggo hater, or that I'm conducting and my cycling chums are, you know, are doing some sort of smear campaign innuendo. But, you know, Wiggins actually isn't.
Excuse me, that's Sir Wiggo. Sir Wiggo.
Pardon, Sir Wiggo. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm still not used to that. I think that, you know, he's not an overnight sensation. I mean, Brad's been in the top five before. In fact, based upon Lance being dethroned, you know, he podiumed in 2009. So, you know, I think that Wiggins is an interesting one. I mean, he's one of those guys that has a unique physiology, has the lung capacity, has the horsepower. I mean, he was a multiple medal winner on the track in the Olympics, and was a legend and a hero on the track. And he was one of those few that made that transition to greatness on the road. And it was a steady climb. It wasn't an overnight thing. I mean, he had a lot of did not finishes in his career, and he's, you know, one top 10 and some unfortunate injuries. And I think last year he was able to put it all together with a powerful team that was dedicated to his victory. But what I've always taken exception to is how the press has created Wiggins as this incredible Tour de France legend, and how they've turned him into this marketing monstrosity of products, from Fred Perry to guitars to scooters, and now he's been knighted, and he's won one Tour de France. I mean, are you bloody well kidding me? I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, seriously.
I mean, got it.
You know, you win one tour, and all of a sudden, it's like you've created
the second
coming. Yeah, you've created the cure for cancer. No offense. Anyway.
sorry, I didn't even see that connection coming.
No. But I think Wiggins is an interesting story, because here's a guy who, on one hand, says he doesn't want to be a hero and doesn't want to be a celebrity. On the other hand, after the Spotty Awards, is up on stage playing his guitar, doing radio bits with his hero, Paul Weller, appearing in commercials, cashing in like you wouldn't believe, getting caught up in controversial tax avoidance schemes, and making all the same mistakes that Lance made. And this is why all of us doubters, quote unquote, are having so much trouble, because it is like Lance all over again. His handlers are making the same mistakes. His circle are making the same mistakes. He's blocking people on Twitter. He's calling them effing C-words and everything else. He's doing exactly the same things that Lance did. And not only that, you watch his guys at the tour. Five guys rode on the front for 3 weeks straight. And not only that, but he won four tremendous races throughout the year, and you can't say, do we have doubts? do we have concerns? Paul Kimmich actually today said the exact same thing in a German interview. He has concerns. He is not convinced. And plus, Team Sky had their issues and had some, I guess you could say, dubious people behind the scenes. So, you know, I don't know. I really struggle with Brad Wiggins. Is he a story? Absolutely. You know, is he deserving Tour de France champion? Time will tell. But I tell you, I have to say thank you, because without him, we wouldn't have about half of our comedy.
Let me take a moment again to remind our listeners, we're speaking with the UCI overlord, not Pat McQuaid, and Leslie Cohen from Cyclismus.com. Well, Leslie, this is a story that really you had a big part in this past year, and that is the chip-in campaign that you put together for Paul Kimmich. Let's back into that story a little bit. Tell us where it stands today. I know the dollars are huge, and the UCI sort of backed away.
Yeah, they have. Right now it stands that they have put on hold their suit against Paul. Paul has retained Swiss legal counsel, and he's filed his own, I don't want to call it a countersuit. It's more of a...
it's an investigation,
you know,
isn't it?
Yeah, they're trying to get an investigation going and put them on notice. To date, the funds earned over $92,000. I have to say it's probably the single most gratifying thing that I've probably ever done. I will always be proud of being involved in this. And it was a tremendous honor, privilege, and treat to meet Paul in New York two months ago at the New York Velocity Roller Races, along with meeting Emma and Betsy, and just being in the room with those people, and Kathy LeMond. It was just great. So where are we at? We've paid some legal bills so far. We don't know how many more bills are coming in. We don't know yet, because the case is obviously not resolved yet.
Right.
We don't know where we're at with it. You know, Paul is, I think he's talking to the lawyers tomorrow, as a matter of fact, to find out where they're at in terms of the prosecutor picking up the investigation and just how many more legal bills he's going to incur.
Well, you know, you kind of broke
it's
that
ongoing.
Thing. You broke it wide open. It's been one of my favorite stories of 2012. And certainly, I mean, I was privileged enough to get to talk to Paul because of you. You helped put that together. Yeah, the whole thing's been really awesome. So let's move on to somebody who might be a little more obscure. Back in August, BBC Cycling asked the question, Marianne Vos, is she the world's greatest cyclist? So is she? And if so, why?
I think she is. She is my hero. Are you kidding? So one of my favorite quotes from her is, I can imagine all the riders are bored of me winning, but I'm not bored.
That's a great quote.
She is unbelievable. She started riding bikes when she was 5 years old. She has been compared to a female Eddie Merckx, which is kind of the standard by which all pro bike racers are going to be held.
Right.
Okay, let's look at some stats here. 2012 alone, Marianne Vos won the World Cyclocross Championships, 5 stages, and the overall at the Girondin, the Olympic Road Race, the World Cup overall title, and the World Road Championships. She won the 9-event Women's Road World Cup Series, which was her 4th title, by the way, and she won 3 of the 6 races that she started and finished 2nd at another. And of the 6 World Cup races she entered, she never finished worse than 3rd. She is a complete bike racer.
How old is she?
She's 25.
Wow, she still has a lot of career left.
And look at the palmares she's got. She's passionate. She's so good that she wanted to race against men because she's been beating all of the women that she races against.
Yeah.
Hands down, I think she is the most amazing bike racer. Sight, road, time trialing, she probably BMX great. Are you kidding?
BMX? Why not?
She just is never tired of racing. She loves the competition in all the disciplines. She just tweeted, I think earlier today, a picture of herself on the track one day and the very next day slogging through the mud on a cyclocross course. I mean, who does that?
She does. She does. All right, we have two stories left. One is going to take a while because it's just the biggest story of the year, probably. I'm actually going to run this one by you guys because this came from my friend Keith Laughlin, who's head of Rails to Trails, and I wish he would have stayed in politics because he's so brilliant. We just stopped short of falling off the fiscal cliff, but this might give you some insight into just how dysfunctional Congress is from the cycling perspective. Listen to what Keith had to say today. While cycling was enjoying a boom in communities across the country, Congress passed a transportation bill that was awful for cycling. One reason was that cycling lost its biggest champion, Congressman Jim Oberstar, in the 2010 election, and the only person to replace him in a position of influence was Senator Barbara Boxer, a Democrat from California who chairs the Senate Transportation Committee. She promised cycling advocates that they would be pleased with the bill she negotiated with anti-cycling advocates. But when describing how she negotiated the final bill, she bragged that she first sat down with Senate Republicans and, quote, met them halfway. Then she sat down with House Republicans and, quote, met them halfway. Therefore, by her own admission, the bill that she negotiated only represented 25% of what she originally wanted. The result? Funding for cycling was immediately cut by 30%, with another 30% cut possible depending on how the bill is implemented at the state level. So the painful irony is that while America is enjoying a cycling renaissance, Congress passed a bill that turned back years of progress on federal funding for cycling by 20 years. What do you say? Yeah.
You know, I'm involved with cycling advocacy in several countries, and I do a lot of work in the grassroots, and I've done work on 1 meter legislation, and I've also done work on funding. And I think part of the challenge is that from an American perspective, because I do work in the States, I do work in Canada, and I do work in England, and I think all three countries are suffering from the same problem, and that is that we're relying on government to do things for us that we should be doing for ourselves. And I think that part of the issue is government has become so bloated, so confrontational in all three countries, that nothing gets done. And it's absolutely appalling. And that we allow this as voters and as taxpayers, we allow this to happen. And that they feel that they have to compromise, that they have to pork barrel, that they have to do all these things that have nothing to do with what we actually need. And we need cycling infrastructure. We've got, in all three countries, we have a burgeoning obesity epidemic for a variety of reasons. And the sad thing is we should be promoting activity. We should be promoting children on bicycles. We should be promoting all sorts of different things. But cycling is such an activity that creates good health. And when I read an article out of England that said that back in the 1960s, I believe, that the average person rode 350 miles a year. And now the average person rides 50 miles a year. And part of that problem is because people don't feel safe. I mean, how many people in the States are being hit on their bicycles? How many people in the States are getting, told that they're, that they're freaks for, shaving their legs or wearing Lycra or riding on the road? And it's appalling that we have we've lost our civility. We've lost our mutual respect for other individuals. We have put people into sound bites. We painted them into either, raving liberals or raving right-wing tea partiers, when 80% of us are probably more in the middle. And I think it's absolutely atrocious that you have someone who says they're a cycling advocate feels that they have to negotiate. Right. I think it's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, this is necessary. And if Congress isn't willing to do it, well, damn well, we've got to start doing it ourselves. I take a look at what the city of Portland has done, and I spent a considerable amount of time in Portland, and I take a look at what that city has done for themselves, and they've done some phenomenal things. Minneapolis is another city in the States that's done phenomenal things for cycling infrastructure, and they've done it at the local level. people contributing to make it happen, local politicians making it happen. And I think that we need to get back to a situation in Canada, the U.S., and England where we start relying on, in Canada and in the local municipalities, in England, the local counties, in the States, the local cities and the local counties as well. It needs to start happening there. And people need to start engaging locally and saying, we're going to make this happen for ourselves. And if you get millions of people doing the same thing in their own specific areas, then in 15 years, what's going to happen? We're actually going to have a cycling infrastructure.
Right.
And I think that's what needs to happen. We can't rely on the damn federal government of all these countries to do the right thing. We have to start doing it at the grassroots level, at the local level, because back in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, that's what happened.
Right.
That's where we got to where we are. In all three countries, we got there because of local action. And when local action rises up to the top, then we get to see these wonderful things occur. And that's a problem throughout all sectors, not just cycling.
I can't disagree. And yeah. I like your, you know, emphasis there. So we can't avoid it. We're going to have to say something about it. We don't have to take a lot of time doing it. What's the big takeaway from Lance? Is there a takeaway? I mean, what really? Or is he just going to sort of fade into whatever?
I don't know. You know, he keeps changing his Twitter profile to be more and more anonymous and everyday and banal. So perhaps it's his hope that he'll just kind of slink away into anonymity and obscurity. I don't know. He certainly, I don't think he's going to confess or admit to anything, because if he does, he's going to face legal repercussions. And he's already facing financial repercussions. You know, the Sunday Times is suing him to regain the funds that they lost when he sued them.
Right. I think that was $300,000. By itself. Right. Exactly.
Right. And then you've got the SCA promotions case where they want to recoup all of the bonus and completion money that they paid out to guarantee that, you know, he would finish the Tour de France and win. I hear he's got his houses on the market. You know, I think the Gulfstream jet is up for sale. He's losing sponsorship and endorsement contracts. I'm pretty sure his public speaking schedule has dwindled.
So do you think this has been a good thing for cycling in its own kind of perverted way?
Okay, I'm gonna say this.
Okay,
Lance Armstrong is the Lee Harvey Oswald of cycling.
Ooh, what an interesting comparison.
He is the patsy. Doping has been an issue, and in cycling, even Alexei Graywall came out and talked about doping. So I think that he's been held up as this pariah. And he's been thrown under the bus, and I'm going to say it. I'm going to say some names. He's been thrown under the bus by guys like Thomas Wiesel. He's been thrown under the bus by Hein Verbruggen. He's been thrown under the bus by Pat McQuaid. He's been thrown under the bus by even Jim Akowitz, who was one of his coaches. He's been thrown under the bus by all these guys, and Brunel along with him, and everyone else who said, "Well, I want to preserve my career." You know, they've got 6 months and they get to walk and they get to go back to the cycling world like good little boys. I feel for Lance in some respects, because he bought into the mythology. He bought into his own mythology. He bought into the fact that he was this hero and this champion when it was built on a foundation of sand. And now he's paying the price. And I think, you know, he's got two ways to go. And I hope he learns from this. And I hope that he regains a bit of his humanity, and then that he can live out his life for the next 40 years. Because, you know, no one deserves to go through what he's been through. Yeah, you know, he brought it on himself. And yeah, you know, he was a willing party, because he went for the money. He made millions. He became a hero. He was a celebrity. Millions of fans on Twitter. He bought into it. And now he's paying the price. But he is nothing more than the pariah. He is not the end of doping. nor is he the cause of doping. He is probably the single greatest sporting fraud in sports history. But it's not his fault, and he's not solely responsible. And until we bring these other individuals that started him in this and that helped enable him in this, we're going to repeat the cycle. We are destined to repeat the cycle.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was very cool. And I would totally, you know, I'm glad you brought that out in public, because I think the truth is that people either were taking sides. Either he was the good guy or the bad guy, but nobody saw how in some ways he was sort of a victim.
Yeah.
Some of it's his own doing, of course, but the truth is that, you know, as you said, he bought into it, hook, line, and sinker. Well, you know what? This has just been a delightful hour. I'm so happy that we got to review the year, just the three of us. And maybe 2013 will be a better year for cycling, a better year for advocacy, just a better year all the way around. I'm hearing some wonderful things about the year. So, Leslie, UCI Overlord, thank you so much for joining me on The Outspoken Cyclist for our first show of 2013.
Thank you, Diane. It doesn't even feel like it was an hour. Actually.
I know.
It just flew by.
Yeah. I know.
It's going to be a great year. And I have to say, I am so stoked for Louisville at the end of the month. The World Cyclocross Championships, I cannot wait.
Well,
that's going to be a great start to the year.
Excellent. Well, we'll check in and find out how they went for you.
Thank you so much.
All right. Have a great night.
Thanks, Diane. You too.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Dan.
Bye-bye.
Leslie Cohen and the UCI Overlord, a.k.a. not Pat McQuaid, joined us from two undisclosed locations.
Well, she's in New York City. She's willing to disclose her location. Okay. He's undercover, evidently.
And they both contribute significantly to cyclismus.com. And obviously, people with deep experience, insight, and opinions.
Well, yeah, they do. They seem to have their fingers in all the little cycling pies all over the world, actually, not just all over our country or even just in Europe. So I just thought it would be interesting to wrap up what they felt were some of the better stories of 2012. The way they cover them, of course, on cyclismus.com is usually in sort of a satirical, biting kind of way. But I appreciate what they had to say.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's good to take a look back. We will see what happens in the next 12 months with Mr. Armstrong, Mr. Wiggins.
Just with the whole cycling scene, I'm also interested. You know, we are not too far from the bike summit. We're not too far from the whole cycle of cycling this year. So, yeah, I'll be leaving for NABS in a couple of weeks.
All right.
Yeah, I'm going to head on out to Denver in, actually, it's the first week of February. That's pretty exciting. So it should be a good show this year. Denver's a nice venue, I think.
Well, it is wickedly cold here in Northeast Ohio.
Yes, it is.
Hate to talk about the weather, but I guess it has finally dawned on us
that we have winter. Well, you know what? After last year, I don't think any of us expected it.
We had gotten a little spoiled with relatively warm temperatures and a lack of snow, and already this year we've gotten both. So I guess we're in for a normal year.
Yeah. Well, my problem is it's icy, and I don't like, you know, being on the ice. I'm not a skater per se, so
you need some studs or some
my little shoesies.
You can get those to go over. You can get those.
Yeah.
They make them. I'll send you a link.
Wow.
You can get them for your bike tires. You can get them for shoes. Yeah, you can get
that
them for your shoes.
Yeah. Okay. I'll look into that.
Okay.
All right.
We'll look into joining us next week for another edition of The Outspoken Cyclist, if you would.
Show number 2 for 2013.
All right. Thanks for listening. We'll see you then.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Lees. We'll be back next Saturday evening from 5:30 to 6:30 here on WJCU 88.7 FM and streaming live on the internet at WJCU.org. Don't forget, this show is available as a downloadable podcast also at WJCU.org, and we're on Facebook at The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.